Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordics podcast. At Evolution, we are committed to helping people and Nordics tech organisations realise their potential. Our goal is to develop deep relationships with individuals, building trust to make doing business easier. I'm Georgia Benton from Evolution Recruitment Solutions, and today I'm your host. So today I'm joined by Håkan Westerberg, who's a team manager at SEB Technology. I have Alejandro Moret, who's director in Autonomous Drive at CEBT. And I have Daniel Nilsson, who's a development manager at Hoagy Group, to discuss promoting versus hiring, building high-performing teams. Before we delve deeper into the topic, let's work our way around the room with some introductions. I'd love to know who you are, what you do, and what your biggest passion is currently. Håkan, do you want to kick us off?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Georgia. Thanks for having me. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a team manager at SEB Technology. And right now I'm a team manager for three quite new teams to SEB that I've spent the past 2 years recruiting. And we are also geographically distributed over Sweden and Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. I've been with the bank for a whopping 30 years this year. So I've been at most parts, in most parts of the bank. And yeah, that's me.
Amazing. Thanks for introducing yourself. And Alejandro, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. I introduce myself as Alex. I realize that Alejandro is quite difficult in Sweden. I'm working as a director for Autonomous Drive. Those are the vehicles of the future that will have no driver. It's a very futuristic technology, and we wish we were just trying to put a man on the moon, because that was already achieved in the past, but having a vehicle with no driver is very difficult. I'm working at a company called SEFT, or a Seeker Technology Europe, and I'm leading a team of a very, very talented senior engineers, leading projects and with a lot of expertise on this technology. I've been at this company for more than 6 years, and it's super fun, especially representing a big Chinese company and introducing those vehicles into Europe and into the US. It's challenging because we have both worlds and actually introducing into the US as well. So that's a little bit about me, automotive engineer. Thank you for this.
No problem. Perfect. And Daniel, last but not least, can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Daniel Nilsson, and I work as a development manager at Hoagy Group. We basically create applications to make companies grow in economics and HR and even transportation. I've been with Hoagy for 7 years, and basically I've been with the same team almost, or the same part of the company the whole time. So we are making economic systems, basically. That's what we do. And I'm a manager for two teams with making attest applications and invoicing. And what I'm passionate about. Well, I like to see people grow and thrive in the development environment, I would say, or in the teams.
Oh, thank amazing. You. No problem. No worries. That's perfect.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
now that we've established a bit of a context to each of you, let's move on to the topic in focus. So you'll have a question or statement on promoting versus hiring. As usual, I'll work around the room and I'll pose your question. But if you could give me your reasons behind it, and each of you will have the opportunity to take your give your take on the situation. I'll start with Daniel. So I've got your question here. How do you keep the company or team culture alive when you're hiring consultants? Would you be able to tell me a little bit about the context behind that?
Yeah, we normally don't use consultants in our company because we want to have the knowledge inside the company. So I myself have been a consultant before I started here, and I know we have a solid and a great culture at our company right now, and I think that would be a problem when you almost always, probably going to switch out the team members. So I think how do you keep up with the culture in the teams or in the company?
Right, perfect. And what do you guys think, Håkan, Alex?
Well, at SEB, we try to keep the number of consultants low, but for some, two other reasons is, of course, cost and dependency reasons. So keeping, I mean, the level of consultants are quite few, and you at our site in Stockholm, we are over 5,000 who are working there. So keeping the culture, the company culture up is really no problem because we are a big company and we are very many. I think it's one of the largest private facilities in Sweden, really. We absorb. I mean, the consultants absorb our culture, and we always include all the consultants in everything we do. So we don't exclude them from, you know, team meetings or after works or anything. We include them as we do with the employees, because as we have them, a fewer of them, but we keep them for a longer time. And that is also to have the experience sharing and competence sharing alive. If we just hire consultants for a very short time, we risk of losing the competence sharing parts. So I think from that aspect, we keep the company culture up.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Alex?
What is it? Okay, let's see. I believe there are two key elements in this. I believe that, at least for us, the consultants, the hiring consultants compared to employees might not be the biggest problem. Maybe I would like to think about rotation. That's actually one of the company killers. How much rotation? We have many consultants. Our company was built mainly on consultancy. So I would say that we are on the other side of SEB. The number of consultants we have is very high. But that doesn't mean at all that the company culture is not kept among the consultants. Many of them show our core values much better even than some of the employees. I would say that the main problem is how to keep the company culture with the rotation. Here in Gothenburg and working in automotive, we are at least four big companies. It's Volvo, Volvo Cars, it's ourselves, it's Einride. So there is rotation inside. So maybe one of the problems that we have is how to keep the seeker culture and not mix it with the Volvo culture when we have this rotation or Volvo Cars culture. So that would be one of the aspects. And the second aspect is that I follow a little bit what Håkan is saying. One of the key things here is do not make any difference at all between consultants and employees. And that I keep that to the letter. So sometimes they ask me, and I don't even know who's consultant, who's employee. I need to think. I have the one-on-ones with everybody. Everybody has the same opportunities. Of course, I prioritize when there is a growing position or career development, I prioritize the fixed employees because I know that the consultants have other perks, but that doesn't mean that we do any difference. Everyone is invited to the same. We do the workshops the same, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the tools that I use is that we have an offsite every quarter in our department. So we go there and we use that one day every quarter to build culture, to do team building, to work on the team dynamics, to set the structure and the strategy of the team, and everybody participates. I think that helps. Long answer.
Yeah. That's a great answer. But that's what I thought. Just as Håkan, as you said, I think that's the key value of that question is to just include everyone in everything, even if it's a team building or if their consulted due date is next day. it's a key value to always include everybody in everything. I think, yeah. Okay, great.
Amazing.
Great answers.
Perfect. And Alex, we'll come to your question next. So more on the flip side, if you're promoting internally, how do you keep fresh and out-of-the-box ideas coming into your projects and also at the same time to see your own failures? Would you be able to tell me a little bit about where that comes from?
That comes from, of course, most of us. Even though everyone wants to promote, wants to do a career development inside the company you are, and many of the times the what we see as the closest obstacle is that there is a gap or a space in a place where you can grow. Of course, usually, for example, when there is such a gap, you look at the team and you say, who is the best, or the one that could do that the best? And many times we end up in the pitfall of selecting the best engineer, perhaps for a manager position, because it's internally. But the best engineer might not be the best leader, for example, or if we talk about project leading or product leading or a people leading, it doesn't matter. Okay, so the people that are doing a fantastic job in their area are the usual suspects that are encouraged to go there. But one of the problems, for example, if we do that, of course, it's very good because internal promotion increases the value and the motivation and the willingness to do a good job. But the problem is that if we're doing something wrong, if we have bad habits, if we have a perhaps not very healthy culture, if we are not able to thinking out of the box, and what you do is get one of those persons to take even a more senior role, then it will be the same. So how do you balance? If you bring someone externally, of course, you will have a fresh eye. Of course, you will have a out of the box. Of course, you will have a lot of challenging questions at the beginning. Why do you do like that? Why this? Why that? Until they go more into the more box thinking. So how do we find the right balance?
Yeah.
What are you guys thinking?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a tricky question. But As I said, I've been recruiting a lot for the past 3 years, so I brought in a lot of new people. So my problem has more been like, how do I keep the in-house SEB knowledge and network to the new teams? So I've done a mix of recruiting internally. Out of the, I think it's 17, I've been recruiting for the past 18 months. I have recruited 5 internally. And the rest externally. But on an overall basis, the policy for SEB is that when you recruit, you should always advertise internally first. And that is to give everyone the opportunity to grow and look for a new position or advance in the company. But when we can't really find the proper candidate within the company, then we're allowed to go externally also, if we're not just expanding like I have. So I could go externally immediately, because if I recruit internally, I dig a hole somewhere else, and that is not really on a mass scale very good. So yeah, but it is a balance question, of course. Maybe it's easier when you're at the big site as we are. And since we've been recruiting a lot in several parts of the bank for the past years, we have a lot of new, fresh eyes in the bank anyway. And what we can do is also that we recruit from different areas of the bank to other areas, and then you get a new perspectives from that side. You can
internal rotation.
Internal rotation. Yes.
I would like to say exactly as Alex said. That's the biggest pitfall of them all, to take the best engineer. Like, let's make him the boss right now. Yeah. And like, oh no, don't do that. And so we have struggled with that a lot as well. But I think we have a lot of LIA studenter. We have what do you call it? Yrkes.
Internships.
Yeah, internships. Yeah. So we have a lot of new people coming in, and we are helping them to educate themselves basically with the team. So I think we get a lot of input from there. And then we have quite a lot of free time to experiment with new stuff and new technologies and stuff like that. So I think the new ideas it's a lot of questioning about how it looks at Hugat it as it does. Of course, all the time. We have our forums. The developers are running their own forums and picking each topic that they want to oversee or whatever. So I think that's not the hard part. But I think that, as you say, and what I say to myself when I'm promoting people, I usually see the person as not what they do, how the person is, more than... If you have the best engineer, maybe he hasn't the best people skills, or maybe he's good as an engineer, but not very good handling people and stuff like that. So I think that's how I take it, or how I select or coach these guys or girls to move on. Mm. I think that it's a common, because I have in my position, I have a directive from my boss to find my next my replacement of my job, and my boss has also that commitment to find him or her replacement within the team. So I'm always challenging my team members to take the next step, or but I'm looking more as how they can take care of internships and how they take care of new employees and so on. If they like it, they maybe can change to be promoted or and then we have some internal promoting as well between teams and between companies inside the Hugia group. So I think we solved that, but it's a common mistake to take the best engineer and put him at, now you're going to do administrative jobs. I was like, what? You didn't tell me that.
As the best engineer, it worked for me.
Yeah.
I can do this. I have a follow-up question. To you two. Now that this open up, if we simplify and we think, for example, in my company, we have three main lines of work. One is leading people, the other is working with the product, and the other is leading projects. Where would you say that it's the easier to bring new people, to hire people externally in one of those three pillars?
Oh, that's...
I have my suspicion.
Yeah, you have your suspicion.
Mm. Good line managers are quite hard to find also.
Yeah,
they definitely
are.
And if I just revert back to the last question about this pitfall we were talking about, but I think it's very important to have a clear career path for system engineers, system developers, so that they don't just want to become a line manager, because that is probably not the best, whether best fit to be. So, of course, it's easier if you're a big workplace, but after, I mean, we have system developers and then we have a tech lead for every team, and that could be the next natural step for them to become tech lead if you're committed and interested in all these things and like to browse new technologies and platforms and whatever. And then after that, you can become a solution architect and work with the Architect Group. And if you want to go even further, you can become Dwayne Architect and so on. So there is a clear path for techies that don't want to go through the HR manager role.
We don't have that clear path yet, I say. We have like to senior developer, and then you don't, and that the senior developer role is not that you have coded 15 years now, Klitsch, you're a senior developer. It's more how do you mentor other people? How do you bring in junior developers or new developers into your team? How do you involve them in our products? That's their role more than they have X years or they're extremely good engineers. So the senior developer is more like a mentorship than it's a technical job that it is as well, but still it's you need to know the technology to teach the technology.
Yeah. So those so roles are kind of case. They are leader roles as well, but
yeah,
they're not solely.
No, we don't have like tech leads roles. and we have maybe unspoken roles like tech leads and.
In our case, and I think that's very good, and I saw it the first time when I came to Sweden many years ago, and I think it's great. What we have is these three career paths. People that are very good technicians, they can go into the product and grow as high as possible. Others can grow on project leading, and others can grow on line management. Mm-hmm. And salaries are totally equal on mm-hmm. all levels. So I think that's a good way of making sure that the good engineers can remain being good engineers. Yeah. They don't need to do a change and start doing admin, for example, and ruin their best skills. Good, thank you.
It's great to know that. Yeah, like you said, Alex, it's great to know that that's equal along the way. So that's perfect. Yeah. And Håkan, I've got your question next. How do you keep up good collaboration and team spirit in geographically distributed teams and over different time zones too? Tell me a little bit about where that comes from.
Well, that comes, of course, from that we just recently became a geographically distributed team with two of my three teams are distributed and with the two-thirds here in Stockholm and one-third in KL. And the tricky bit is the time difference, I would really say. I mean, of course, the distance in itself makes it difficult to see each other often because it's a 14-hour flight to KL. But the time difference is right now 7 hours. They don't go by summertime and wintertime, so it differs. But right now it's 7 hours. And that means that we can work together early in the morning until about 11 a.m. when they go home. So we try our best to use that time to joint meetings with them. So our schedules are filled in the morning to be able to collaborate with our friends in KL. But I just wondered if you have any experience from that, because we live in such a global world right now, and how we can improve on that, because it only gives us 10-12 hours a week to work together, and we can meet maybe or 3-4 times a year. Either some of us are going to KL or some of them coming to us, but it's not the same thing as sitting together 3 days a week as our policies in SAP to be on prem.
Perfect. And what are your guys' thoughts, Alex?
Oh, I just get sad because of the question, because we suffer the same. And there is no silver bullet for that. So as you understand, I am working for a company based in China. So while our team here, it would be of 2 digits, our team in China is 3 digits. So they're 10 times bigger all the time. And actually, one of our customers is in the US, and many times we need to meet the three of us. So it's difficult. I would say that we do the same as you. In the mornings, we try to meet with the Asia. In the afternoons, we try to meet with the US. For me, one of the main problems to collaborate is perhaps the cultural differences, and not that much the time, though.
How does that express itself, the culture?
It expresses a lot, for example, in how, and especially living in a Scandinavian country, how we work with the hierarchy. So mm-hmm. we speak with our Chinese colleagues, they respect hierarchy to a very high level, and only managers or people that have authority can take decisions, and decisions are law, while in Sweden, everything is super democratic. People with the authority, more or less, know the authority is on the team. So people feel much more free to express opinions. In a way, I believe that in Sweden, we explore all possibilities before taking a decision. So the decisions are the right one, but we have explored a lot, so we go a bit slow. While perhaps in China, it's top-down, and it's take this path. Maybe it was not the optimal path, but they execute much quicker. There is two ways of looking at that. On the other hand, during COVID, we all learned a lot how to work from home. In my team, I have, I think, 8 different nationalities. And sometimes during COVID, we were working from home, even from different countries. So we were not meeting each other that much. I still believe a lot in meeting. I still go to meet our Chinese colleagues, and I go to the US as often as possible, several times a year. That's what you build trust. And trust is the grease or the oil that makes everything happen. You don't feel it. You cannot touch it, but it's...
I totally agree with you on that one.
Me too. We don't have that problem, I would say. I think we are thinking of trying it out, of course, but we're not there yet. But we don't have that bigger time difference. But I have some experience just by working with the other cultures, and that's. That is just as Alex says. It's the culture is difficult. We don't respect hierarchy in Sweden at all, basically. And if you compare us with Chinese or Indian,
I guess we are the odd ones.
You are even compared to the UK.
We have a large presence in the Baltics, and they are more hierarchical than we are, much more.
It doesn't exist any silver bullet for this. I think it's hard. Not. I think, it is hard. I don't have any experience at all.
No, it's working well for us, but we started with the first team members in KL last summer, so we haven't been so far yet. So I just wanted to hear if there were any good tips or anything. But I understand that we're on the right path, and it's just keep it alive and try to use every opportunity to meet in person, of course. But it's time consuming and costly. But of course, use these hours in the morning for us in this case.
I've spoke to obviously clients in the same kind of situation where they've kind of got offshore teams in different countries, different time zones. One thing that I've heard that goes really well is having a kind of virtual meeting but not talking about work every now and then as well. Just having a coffee break or as you guys call it, a fika, a virtual fika where you can catch up and not talk about work and kind of build good relationships. It goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, I know. My Scrum Masters, they are very good at having these little fun quizzes and things that has nothing to do with work. It just to break the ice and get to know each other better.
We had that a lot under COVID, because before COVID, you wasn't allowed to work at home at all at Hogia. But after that, the world catched up with us. So now we have like 3 days at on premise. So it works well. We had a lot of like cahoots and a lot of fun. I had with my team and other teams, I invited for like a daily workout and stuff like that. So I had like disco lights and music and let's stand up and so on. So it was fun. Good. Yeah. We learned quickly there over COVID. So
good. One of the things that we also do and helps is that we have an internal rotation. So we encourage people from Sweden to move perhaps for a year or even 3 months or even 2 years to work in our China office, and the opposite. We have people from the Chinese office working with us that also builds. Last time we have two project leaders working with us here 4 months, sitting in our office, and we do the same. And that helps as well. Yeah. We see that then everything is much easier. Actually, after that.
Yeah, I can imagine that definitely helps. Again, with the face-to-face side of things, it's just about building those strong relationships, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, perfect. No, great answers. Great discussion. Daniel, I have your next question. So how do you keep code sustainable for a long period of time while changing consultants?
Yeah.
Give me a bit of context about that.
As you know, or if you don't know, but I'm going to tell you, Hugia has been around like from 1980s. We have done economic programs from I think Patinha told me in 1978, he built his first one. So our application lives long. And the a big problem that I, even with my developers in my teams, I say, it's too old. And I'm like, yeah, why? Oh, we need to rebuild this. I'm like, okay, why? How are we going to, it's not even that big. You know, you heard it, I think. When you have consultants, everybody have their religion or taste or whatever you call it. To build applications. And even if I don't have that many consultants, I can even imagine to have more frequent new senior developers or so on want to change the application a lot and rebuild it a lot and so on. So that's why that's the background of it. And I would just want to hear your input to it.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah, Alec.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you have very old systems like we do in the bank, we have our core systems, our main platform, it's over 50 years old. It's from 1971, and we are actually exchanging that now, and it takes time. We've been doing that for some years, and we will continue for a couple of years. But, of course, most developers that started developing that platform are probably not alive now. So, yeah.
Well, yes, they are. They would never acknowledge it.
Yeah. And the documentation in the beginning, it was, you know, nil and nothing and nada. I think the Y2K thing around the year 2000 made us document a lot of things. So after that, everything when it comes to documentation has become much more strict. So now it's much better documented. But of course, a lot of things still sit in the heads of people. And as I said, the question was regarding consultants, I think. But as I said, we are using consultants over a longer period of time, very short, so we treat them like staff. So that's really no difference between if the code is programmed from the beginning of a consultant or an employee. It is the same procedure of, you know, spreading the knowledge and documenting well what we've done. But of course, when a system gets, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old, there have been many, many people in there. and they all have their different flavors of things that they add. Yeah. And so on. So, yeah, that is a problem. But, I mean, we are more strict about the documentation and what tools to use and what languages to use. So we're streamlining it, but we also want to have the freedom to be the artistic freedom of the developers also, of course, so that they just don't feel like machines writing code, but a more streamlined than in the 80s is preferable. Yes.
Yeah, Alex.
I don't know if that's the answer, but that's how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a follow-up question with that question, if you
go ahead.
Yes,
you do. Alex, do you have any thoughts on the first question?
I feel like I will say a topic, but of course, I want to say it. Automotive software is a bit different. Automotive software, what we do is we have platforms that last 5 years. We don't have anything older than that. In those platforms, we have vehicle projects that last 2 years under development. And then the vehicles need to last for like 15, 20 years. But we mainly don't want to touch them once we have released them.
Yeah.
It's very annoying in mind that we're selling, for example, 100 vehicles to customers. And suddenly you find a software bug. It's super costly to ask everybody to come to the workshop and fix something. So we definitely discourage everyone to do what Håkan was saying. We discourage creativity. We discourage flexibility. We discourage thinking out of the box. Please focus. These are the requirements. Very square. Implement this and only this. Don't add any changes. Don't change because the new platform will contain all the changes, for example. So we don't have that much legacy code. And we need to remember that a vehicle is the product that is sold to customers, to end customers, with the most lines of code in the world. There's nothing that has the more lines of source code. No. They're super complex. So we need to be very strict with these strict and boring processes to make sure that we don't have creativity.
Okay.
And with your, sorry, Daniel, so with your, obviously, the kind of, the lack of creativity, shall we say, a lot of that creativity I'm guessing will become before in the research and stuff like that beforehand. Yes,
it goes at the beginning of the of a new platform, then we can be very creative, but the sooner we are to the launch of the vehicle, the more we restrict, the more filters we put. And if someone would come and say we need to rebuild this or so, we shoot them. Sorry, you're not welcome here.
So my car doesn't work. I can't hear you.
Oh, perfect. Sorry, Daniel. Okay. Yeah, go ahead and ask.
Yeah, my follow-up question. How do you get the how do you help or how do you maintain the the competence between the teams, and how do you help the teams to grow? How are you working with that, if you know what I mean?
Okay.
How do the teams? Jag vet inte vad jag ska säga. Hur på svenska då? Hur får man teamen? Eller hur gör ni för att få teamen att växa eller att hålla kunskapen i teamen liksom.
So how do we get the teams to grow collectively and keep up the knowledge and
keep up the knowledge.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think first of all you have to promote the learning culture and allow learning on a regular basis. And in SEB, for example, overall in SEB, I think it's 35 hours per year the company wants all of us to spend on learning and growing and, you know, taking, you know, plural site trainings and so on. But on the tech side, I would rather say that that's the floor. I mean, because we have so many new tools, technologies, platforms. It moves very fast in the .NET world where we are working. And we also promote sharing knowledge to other team members, of course, and we encourage cross-team training sessions, encourage taking on mentorships for colleagues, and we also plan for knowledge sharing in each and everyone's PDDs, the development discussions that we have. Performance and development discussions. So that's a big part of the job is to grow and also to maintain to get people to stay within the bank.
Alex. I think that's the perfect answer, isn't it? You have just described the perfect role model. On top of that, I can only add that something we work with a lot is with the lessons learned. We have something called the White Book, and it's a compilation of the lessons learned that we have had during projects. And then that's a mandatory thing that we always need to do, and that when we begin a new project, we need to read it and get the learnings from the previous projects. We improve our processes, we improve our way of working, et cetera, et cetera. Many of those are useful, many of those are not, but it's a way of documenting the knowledge so that the knowledge is somewhere else, not just in the brains of the people. So it's a way of building knowledge on the team, as you were saying.
Yeah.
And then the rest will do like Håkan.
So you don't work anything with mob programming or pair programming or...
Yeah, that can be a part of the mentorship. And yes, we do work with pair programming.
But we work a lot with mob programming and pair programming.
Yeah, pair programming. That's a lot on an individual basis. You know, people really like to work together. They usually tend to sit and solve and program together, solve things and sit together. Of course.
Because we have, like you said, of course, they have Pluralsight and other online, and we have like our own learning at Hoga as well. You can go doing lessons and stuff. And then if somebody is quitting the team and that's a key role, and oh shit, he's gonna leave us now. How are we gonna manage? And because we are using pair programming and mob programming in each PBI or feature or whatever we are doing, there are no people that has more because everybody is always on some kind of level in skill. Like this is in bus handling, this is in Azure DevOps, this is in JavaScript, this is in .NET or whatever. Everybody is always like in different levels. So because of that, we don't have that problem that some people are knows everything or in the project. So that's a big help for us, I think. And even when you see it, if you have two brains and four eyes when you're doing the code, you would never get back the code and find some bugs because they usually found it already because they have maybe three brains and six eyes and so on. So you rarely get any bugs when you deliver.
Amazing. Perfect. And I've got, Alex, I have another question from yourself. So if you focus on external recruitment, how do you keep up the motivation of the current team who have goals to be promoted? Tell me a little bit about that.
It's related to the question that I asked before. What is the right balance between internal promotion and internal rotation compared to having a fresh eye? So if we look now at the case where we're mainly interested in hiring external competence to have a fresh eye or to increase the competence or on something, then what we suffer is that there is a lot of frustration internally in the team because there are less opportunities of growing or changing. Even if it's internal rotation and not just a promotion, I have employees and colleagues who say, I have been working on this area for a very long time. Now I would like to look at other area. Of course, but maybe you're not an expert on the other area, so you will require a curve. So maybe we prefer to bring someone external that already has the knowledge. That creates frustration on the person, for example. So how do you work with this?
For fun. I think I have the opposite problem.
Okay.
When I have guys in my team, they don't want to change team. They're like, no, why would I? Because maybe you like to. No, never. This is my team. But can you help the other team for a couple of weeks? No, why would I? I was like, yeah. Oh my God. Okay, what's happening?
You don't have that problem then.
Don't have that problem at all.
We have it.
Basically, that I have the opposite problem.
Mm. Yeah,
so how do like you?
Yeah, like sorry. I told you before, Alejandro, that I mean, at our company, we have this policy that we should always advertise internally first and let everyone. I mean, senior top management, yeah, they live in a different world. They come from other companies in and out. But on our levels, I mean, even the many manager levels up, we have this policy to always advertise internally first. And if we don't get any proper candidates, then we're allowed to go externally. If we're not like me, I was expanding a lot, then I could go externally at the same time, because they don't want me to dig a lot of holes everywhere else in the bank. I mean, there's also a backside of it, you know, if we recruit too many internally, you dig holes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, normally, because, yes, it is internal.
Yeah, we also try to find internal, but nobody applies. So I'm like, why? No, I'm good here. I'm good.
Yeah, but then.
I mean, we're not that big as you guys are, of course. But seriously, we're like maybe 120 developers and 30 teams basically. So depends. So but it's hard to and I can't go to another team and like, hey, do you want to search here? that's a big no. So
yeah. So. Same with us.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do. Yes. Oh. I have stolen people with pride. Yes.
We don't steal with pride internally.
You started my team.
Oh, that's funny, Alex. And just on the flip side then, so what do you think is why do you think people don't want to move from your team? Daniel, what do you do so well to be able to kind of retain people within that?
I do a good job, maybe, or they're just fat and happy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Comfort.
Comfort.
Fat and happy. I know my job. Maybe not very thrilling, but I know what I have, and it's quite easy
for me.
But it is
thrilling. That's the problem. I think our teams are. It is thrilling. You don't have like.
Well, then that's a reason to stay then.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I asked that question myself many times. Many times.
I mean, often when you change jobs, it's because you want some change, some new things, some new challenges. But if you have a job that gives you new challenges anyway all the time, there's really no reason to change if you like the job in itself. I mean,
So that
and your colleagues and your manager. Yeah.
Yeah. So that could go hand in hand with your question, Alex, is to kind of with that keeping up motivation, it could be to do with those challenges. To make sure that their roles are challenging enough, I'm guessing. Within that.
I agree. So in automotive, in most of the areas what we have is some cycles or escalation paths of seniority. Let's say usually young engineers start as test engineers, then you can go integration engineer, then you can be system engineer, and then a function owner, and then you can be attribute leader. So you will feel that you have more and more responsibility. So whenever, for example, we're looking for one of the top tiers or the top positions in a seniority, there's always a lot of internal application. And many times we find an internal candidate that is good, but some other times we go external and then we see a drop of motivation. And of course, it's a good idea what you're saying, keeping those positions still nice and attractive. And there's actually many people that are just happy, a little bit like with what Daniel say, but some are not. So what we do now is we have one-on-ones, we speak, we make career plans, objectives, and okay, maybe instead of going towards that role, maybe you can look into other functions or shift a little bit to still do a learning, because people get very motivated by keeping learning. How can we make sure that people still learn and develop? Yeah, true. Good. Thank you.
Progressing themselves rather than always just progressing roles through the company. I like that. Okay, perfect. And last but no means least, Håkan, your last question. When picking up new technologies such as Google Cloud, do you train in-house staff only, or do you also hire experience in addition? Tell me about your guys' experience with that, and Håkan, about the kind of context behind it.
Yeah, the reason for the question is that, I mean, we might seem a little bit slow here, but as a bank, we're heavily regulated. So going cloud, the finance industry wasn't the first going there, I could say, but we are going there now. So we need to have more experience from that. And so I wonder how you guys do. I mean, we of course we can train our own team members, but we could also make a mix of bringing in someone who is experienced with this. I just wonder how you normally do when you face some new platform, a new technology, a new programming language or anything. Do you train your own staff and are fine with that, or do you always bring in, or often bring in, maybe as a consultant for a shorter time then, but bring in some more experienced while you start using this new technology? Is it faster? Is it more safe?
We usually, we have been working with Microsoft for since the start, so we are in Azure. So I think it depends on what type of, if it is a language or if it's a program that we're going to use for logging maybe, or it depends. Then we take in some company who's has a role to show our infrastructure team. And then the infrastructure team is like helping all the other teams to embrace this new application and or this code or whatever. So basically, we almost start with a consultant or that shows them the program or have a basic education with the program, and then they will take it further with the other teams. And sometimes we don't. Like now we are going to React, and it's a slow process to change from Aurelia to React. But usually we use standards, like more or less standards. So it's a lot of information out there to learn yourself, not maybe Aurelia, but that was maybe not the best decision in the world, but it works and it has been working very well. So and we get a lot of help from the forum or the community when we need it. So but still, it's basically, yeah, sometimes I would say we take in consultants or some teaching and helps the infrastructure team. That helps the product teams too.
For someone who's a real expert, would you say, who can pass that knowledge on to everyone else?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Alex?
And in our case, I will give you three different ways of us behaving. If I would have the heart of our Chinese colleagues, usually what they do is they train in house. So whenever there is a new technology or a new thing that they need, is they just hire people and start working with that. They have almost infinite number of resources to just expand and have more people, because they see the long term goals. If we think about our sister companies, for example, like Volvo Cars, what they do is a mixed approach. So they usually create, for example, a new or external, semi-external company or department that are at the beginning driven by consultants with that expertise, with the purpose of or the objective that in medium term, in a few years, 1, 2, 3 years, they would have all converted to in-house and employees. And then we'll have that knowledge in-house starting with the external consultants. And if we, if I put myself in our shoes and what we actually do in a Sicker Tech Europe, we usually externalize that. We don't want to achieve, or we don't have the aspiration of being experts in many places. We know what we can do very well, and we focus on that. Everything that is around it, we externalize, and we buy services, and then we are deliver either solutions, turnkey solutions, or the expertise that we need. And that's for almost all the technologies. So we can still remain a small core of people. Perfect. A little bit of pick and choose.
Yeah, you've got a bit of everything going on there, yep. Alex. And on the back of that, I mean, what would you say is the kind of benefits and pitfalls of that, of the option that you do yourself within your teams at Sicker?
Yeah, of course. As we always struggle, because we, for every new technology, and I'm working with autonomous driving, so you name it, artificial intelligence, cloud, super complex sensors, complex software, lots of testing. We have a lot of competencies, and we know that we cannot cope it all. So what we do is the typical saying that says partnership is the new leadership. So we just partner up with a lot of companies, players, or services that can fit and fill the gaps, so that at the end we have a complete product, a Frankenstein product. But that's the way that actually we can do these big projects, because it requires huge capital investments, the kind of technology we're working with.
And I think you also save a lot of time.
Yeah.
Because if you want to have all that competence in one company, you need to learn all that, and maybe but we went, now the world went that way. Oh, dork. And now we need to learn.
Yeah.
I get it.
Exactly.
I get that.
It'll buy you some time, doing that.
Yeah, it saves a lot of time. And I do like that saying, partnership is the new leadership. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to use it everywhere now. So watch out for my next LinkedIn post. No, amazing, amazing. Obviously, it's a great discussion. Got some great advice for a lot of teams out there which will struggle with the same kind of challenges and different situations as well, that they definitely be able to relate to. So I'd love to say thank you so much to all of our guests for sharing their thoughts. So just to recap, we've had Håkan Westerberg, who's team manager from SEB Technology. Alex Morate, he is Alejandro on LinkedIn, but he prefers Alex. So director in autonomous driver at CVT and Sicker. And then we have Daniel Nilsson, who's development manager at Hogia Group. If you're hiring for any new technical roles or looking for a new role yourself, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can just drop me a message too. I'm Georgia Benton. You can find me on LinkedIn or email me at georgia.benton@evolution-nordics.com, or even visit us online at evolutionjobs.com/UK/Nordics. Thank you again so much to all of our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.